The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Our good friend John Gibbons is with us for our weekly environment spot, but I think we may be a little bit at odds over a couple of issues, particularly because a lot of people have picked up on something that I wrote for my back page column in the Business Post last week when I argued that we need more data centres and that we should lift the passenger cap at Dublin Airport. We start with the data centres. Go on, tell me why you think I'm wrong.
Good evening, Matt. Yeah, I suppose maybe if I were to start with the headline, and I know you don't write the headlines, but it certainly was directly picked up from your own piece. You're describing these, you know, limits on data centres and airport passenger caps as acts of self-sabotage, right? This is very emotive language. You know, this suggests things that are basically designed to, you know, basically to make life worse in Ireland for most people. I'm not so sure about that. Okay, let's start with the data centres. Now, okay, data centres are a fact of life. We know that, right? Ireland is an absolute outlier in the world. Now, globally, the average grid around the world, about 1% of its power is driving data centres. And as you well know, in Ireland, it's currently at 21%. That has risen 400% in the last 8 years.
Now, with a projection of going to 30% by the end of the decade, and I suspect that that's an underestimate because of artificial intelligence, generative AI, and the demands that is placing for power, that actually with the number of data centres we have and those additional ones that we should have, I would argue, it will be more. But my argument on that is that the power has been generated from non-fossil fuels and that the majority of the wind farms that we have at present have actually been financed by the big foreign multinational companies which are actually using this power.
A couple of things. Number one, data centre emissions are on track to add an additional 7 million tonnes of emissions to Ireland's tally over the next several years. Now, so the notion that, for example, we can add all these data centres and they're magically harvesting green energy, Matt, I'm afraid that's not the case.
Hold on a second. Yeah, they are the ones who are financing the green energy onshore at present. The problems that we actually have at the moment with green energy, and I was even talking to somebody yesterday who has a solar plant which is generating too much electricity for his own use, but he can't get a connection to the grid to sell his excess into the grid. And the big issue that we have is that because of a failure to invest in the grid, we are wasting on many occasions a lot of the wind energy that we are generating. Now, in addition to that, we could be supplying, or we could be generating 8 times more energy than we need at present for this country. But the failure by the state to invest in the infrastructure, in the grids and in the ports, and in getting the planning right off the coasts means that we haven't developed our offshore wind in the way that other countries have, despite the fact that we are totally suited to doing it. So my argument actually is that I'm all in favour of us getting rid of fossil fuel electricity generation. But the problem is that for while we put a clamp on the fossil fuels, we're not actually supplying the alternatives. Or when we do supply the alternatives, we don't have the grid to facilitate its use.
Yeah, I think Simon Harris alluded to this in the last few days, Matt. He said he was talking about how difficult and expensive it is to upgrade the grid. For example, let's say we want to upgrade the grid. So we want to add in some new pylons, right? And suddenly nobody wants to have pylons near their house. So you're mired in years of objections. The North-South interconnector has been mired in years of objections. And you might say,
that's self-sabotage.
Yeah, that's self-sabotage. You might say that's NIMBYs. But guess what happens when, 350 kilovolt pylon goes near your house, then people have a different tune, right? So there are genuine complexities here. I'd love to take the sort of view of saying, absolutely, we can have our cake.
You can go underground as well, John. Well, and again, people then object to that.
Well, sure. But underground, Matt, the costs on it are absolutely prohibitive. You also have things, for example, like rivers that are next to impossible. The whole undergrounding thing doesn't work. We have a hugely complex hydrological system in Ireland, a huge amount of water. The notion of underground cabling also, of course, it would drive costs absolutely through the roof. So I don't think that's going to happen. But I mean, I think just to come back to the data center thing here, I mean, the points you've made, I think they're all valid points, and you and I have kicked them around here many, many times. But we can't get away from the fact that we have the system that we have. We would like the system to be better, right? But I don't think we can sort of steamroll along and say, well, you know, because we should have a better system, well then, right, let's just drop the chocks. I want more of this. And by the way, when you parry this up, or when you pair this I want more data centres with I want to expand the airport, what it seems
like... We'll come to the airport in a second.
Granted, yeah.
Let's talk about the data centres, because the data centres are essential to the companies that are providing the bulk of the corporation tax revenues in this country at present. About 90% of the corporation tax revenues come from foreign multinationals, the vast majority of which depend on data centres for the business that they do, which provides the profits, which brings about the corporation taxes that we get. We are totally dependent on that corporation tax revenue to make the type of investments we need to do for benefits to the environment in the future. If we didn't have that corporation tax revenue, John, there wouldn't be the money to put into all of the various environmental measures that we want to do, such as the building of public transport, the retrofitting of houses. We would run out of the money to do so. We need to protect our corporation tax revenues. And the problem that we have at present is that these companies are now looking at Ireland as being unfriendly and hostile, so they're going to England to build the data centres. So the environment is not going to be saved if we don't build the data centres. That doesn't actually mean that it's better for the environment. It just means they're built elsewhere and the tax revenues will accrue to the British instead of to us.
Okay, Matt, a couple of things there. First of all, there is a thing about doing our fair share. And like I mentioned earlier, we're currently over-delivering on data centres, over and above anyone in Europe. I think the next highest country in Europe in terms of the percentage of its energy applied to data centres is 5%. We're at 21, heading for 31. Now, do we really need to basically collapse our national grid in order to placate foreign investors? Is that going to help Amazon?
Placate?
Yeah. I mean, is it going to help Amazon or Google or Apple if we destabilize our grid because of...
No, we can improve our grid.
Matt,
and that way we keep the revenues in the country.
If we follow the advice that you're proposing today, what's going to happen is we're going to stampede, right? 2006 style. We're going to stampede into ever more data centres. The grid is going to creak and collapse. We're going to have brownouts and blackouts. And then people like you are going to be saying, well, they didn't tell us this. This is shocking. I can't believe this.
I'm not going to say that.
Oh, you will. Well, what will happen next, Matt, is Google and Amazon and Apple will then turn around and say, now, when we said to build out, we didn't really mean it. You guys were already at one third of your grid. And now, for some reason, because of this stampede, you kept adding it. Then your grid became unstable. Then once you have an unstable grid, we've got, by the way, despite everything that you've said, we're actually very good at grid delivery in Ireland, right? Air Grid, they're actually really good at their job. We have a very stable grid. If you go to California or Arizona or these places, they frequently have brownouts. We have a stable grid, Matt. The best way to make our national grid unstable, unpredictable and bad for foreign direct investors is to overload it with data centres.
But John, what they're having to do in the United States, the amount of power that's required for generative AI is so large. Now the Amazon, Google and Microsoft are all commissioning or buying nuclear power plants.
Sure.
You have actually argued on this programme previously that we shouldn't have our ban on nuclear in this country. Nuclear may be the cleanest when it comes to the carbon emissions form of power generation there is. Hmm. I'm not arguing that we should be putting nuclear into the country, but maybe I should be arguing that to facilitate them.
Well, you wouldn't get an argument from me. The problem, I think, at this stage, Matt, 30 or 40 years ago when nuclear was being proposed, say, down in Carnsore Point, I think it was a great idea. I think it was a huge mistake not to build it. But you know what? That was then. At that time, by the way, wind energy was a joke. Solar energy was virtually non-existent, right? What's happened in the meanwhile is that renewables have become far and away the cheapest dispatchable form of energy on any grid anywhere in the world. So at this stage, if you said to me, I've just found 20 billion, you know, under the mat. What will I do? Will I build a nuclear power station or will I go gangbusters on offshore wind? I'll take offshore wind any day.
Okay, I'll take the offshore wind, but I'll tell you, for all the praise you're giving to the grid, there are far too many people with solar farms or with wind farms and excess energy beyond their own uses that they can't export into the grid because the grid won't let them on. On the airports issue, right? The reason I'm bringing up the airports issue is the planning permission issue at the present has nothing to do with the environment or carbon emissions. It's all to do with the amount of cars that can get into the airport. And when that was put in place in 2007, you had a tiny fraction of people going to the airport using public transport, now it's about 25%. We've had a planning decision in relation to the second runway, which actually facilitates the use of 60 million passengers going through Dublin Airport. If you want to argue against flights on the basis of emissions, there are lots of ways to deal with it. I think you and I have agreed before that you could have things like, for example, you would have a quota of air miles that any individual would have, and once they go over that, they would pay a special levy or tax that would go to the state. But let's not try and pretend, because I think there's a degree of dishonesty at present in relation to the campaign against increasing the cap against Dublin Airport, that this is something to do with climate change. It's actually to do with traffic management, but I think the traffic management has been used as a Trojan horse by environmentalists.
Well, I think the first thing is neither you nor I live near Dublin Airport, right? I'm pretty glad about that, because the people who do live near Dublin Airport would probably have a very different take on this, Matt, and they would probably tell you they don't particularly want additional flights disrupting their lives. But we'll leave that aside just for a second, but just to make the point that this is affecting thousands of people here in Dublin, right, who may not be me and may not be you. That's number one. Number two, you're right. Back in 2007, that ruling was in relation to airport capacity and noise, right? Now, we live, I suppose, very much in now, whether we like it or not, Matt, we live in a world of limits now, right? In 2019, which is long after that, the Dáil declared, as you know, a climate and biodiversity emergency, right? So I suppose it begs the question, when we say that we're in a climate emergency, what exactly do we mean by that? Do we mean actually it's gangbusters on everything? And by the way, a country the size of Ireland with a population of 5 million people, that one of our airports, granted it's our biggest airport, 32 million movements through that airport in 1 year isn't enough. Kind of begs the question, Matt, how did we ever manage in this country back, you go back 20, 30 years?
We didn't manage very well, John. We were a poorer country back then.
But what we weren't up against 20, 30, 40 years ago were hard carbon limits. Now, let's start, right, just the absolute bare minimum. People listen to us today who pull into the petrol station and they put some petrol or diesel into their car, right? They are paying VAT, duty and a carbon tax, right? The same guys filling up out in Dublin Airport, putting the aviation kerosene into their Ryanair, into their Aer Lingus planes, are laughing at them because they're doing it completely tax-free. Your airline tickets are tax-free. So the aviation industry is the biggest tax break in the world, right?
So let's deal with that.
Let's deal with that. But of course,
not put artificial limits on the numbers coming through the airport. And I'll tell you another reason why it's an artificial limit. The population of the country has gone up by about 500,000 last 6 or 7 years. A lot of people coming in and out of the country of that new cohort. The population of the country is expected to expand to about 7 million by 2050, something we were discussing with Gary Murphy earlier. If you have a bigger population, you're going to have more people going in and out via flights.
Sure, that's where limits come in, Matt. The problem, what isn't getting bigger, is the global carbon budget. The global carbon budget is getting smaller and shrinking faster every year. Ireland per capita is consuming more than 50% above the per capita European average carbon emissions, right? We're sky high. We're among the world's per capita highest polluters, right? There are many people, and I think you've heard me make this point before, 80% of the world's population, Matt, have never set foot in an aircraft and never will. Therefore, the damage being done by the aviation industry, which, by the way, is the fastest growing carbon polluter in the world, right? The damage being done by it is almost exclusively being done by people in high-income countries. And not only that, but it is a tiny cohort, maybe 3 or 4% of the population of any given country, that are the frequent flyers. And they're the ones doing the real serious carbon damage. And I hope you're not arguing to say that they deserve a free ride on this. I hope that's not the position that you hold on this.
No, I've been quite clear as to what position I actually hold on it.
So, okay. We accept limits then.
Oh, I think
if
there's ways of imposing limits, but
limits.
Not artificial limits.
Why not?
Well, sorry, because that's ethically dishonest.
If the
campaign to restrict flights into and out of Dublin Airport is going to be on the basis of carbon emissions, fight it on that basis and don't do it by proxy in relation to traffic going into and out of the airport. We're out of time. John Gibbons, to be continued perhaps next week. Thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.